Well, I'm glad so many of you enjoyed last night's Coast to Coast. The subject was, for the first couple of hours, was hoarding. The psychological phenomenon of hoarding. People who are hoarders, they make up a much larger percentage of the population than anybody previously knew until it was studied by last night's guest, Dr. Randy Frost, who co-wrote this new book called Stuff. So go back and grab that on Streamlink. It's worth listening to. Then Open Lines was great, too. So thank you, everybody, for contributing to the show. We'll do a little Open Lines this hour as well. Don't know if you want to pick up on anything that we started last night or just whole new directions. I may give you some suggestions coming up in just a minute. But first, coming up next hour, really looking forward to Adrian Gilbert. Now, Adrian Gilbert is one of two publishing Adrian Gilberts. There are two authors of that name. I believe this will mark the first opportunity I've had to interview both of them. I don't think I've interviewed this Adrian Gilbert before, but the other Adrian Gilbert I have. You know, Adrian Gilbert is the first Adrian Gilbert on Coast to Coast, best known for writing about the pyramids, writing about the Magi. You know, really very interesting historian, but sort of an alternative historian in many respects. And in this case, this Adrian Gilbert may be somebody you may have seen on the History Channel or on Discovery. He is a British military historian, and he has a new book out about the French Foreign Legion. Now, I've always been fascinated by this, the French Foreign Legion, mostly because I didn't quite understand it as a kid. I kept hearing people talk about it, kept seeing it in, you know, cartoons. Pepe Le Pew would be heartbroken because of something that had happened to him, and so he would go off and join the French Foreign Legion. It was sort of like suicide or French Foreign Legion. And then I started, you know, picking up a little bit of sort of pop culture clues about the French Foreign Legion and realized that it's sort of an unusual fighting group. And then the more I've looked into it over the years, the more I've just gotten upside down and how tough this group is and why they are so tough. Now, I have a proposal. I don't know whether Adrian Gilbert will go along with this, but coming up next hour, we'll talk about it. I think, in a way, the reason why the French Foreign Legion is considered to be the toughest fighting force ever is because they're really kind of a zombie army. There's a gate that you have to pass through if you're going to join the French Foreign Legion. Once you've passed through to the other side, your previous life is dead. You are not that other person. They will not call you by that name. There will be no files of the identity that you once were, or at least that's the way it had traditionally been. We'll find out whether that's changed. And so you could just merely declare an identity and then pass through the gates and they'll give you a new one. Once you have your new name, that's all you will be known for. And what you do in the French Foreign Legion from that point forward will be uncheckered by whatever it is that you had done in your past. And you are, because your old life was dead, you are expected to die for the French Foreign Legion. This is a fighting force which has made its name, its reputation, on fighting down to the last man. Taking nothing away from the U.S. Marines, taking nothing away from whatever other, you know, elite regiments out there. As I understand it, even the finest, you know, most hardcore elite group of fighting men around the world still tip their caps to the French Foreign Legion, and we'll find out why. Also, Adrian Gilbert, as military historian, might be interested in a couple of topics that'll pop up in crypto news coming up next. So that will get the ball rolling for Open Lines as well. Stand by for that and grab a line. If you don't, we'll give you the numbers at the bottom of the hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, we'll do a little Open Lines here in the first hour, and then we'll get to our guest, Adrian Gilbert, on the secrets of the French Foreign Legion. What are they doing now? Where do they have their fingers? What are they up to? What kind of an organization is this? Who can call upon the French Foreign Legion? Do they ever get farmed out? What's the difference between the legend and the truth? We'll find out coming up on Coast to Coast. Of all the mysteries in the world tonight, and there are many, which one do you suppose is getting all the buzz on the internet? It's not the story from the Santa Maria Times confirming that the most recent DARPA experiment failed, or at least that's what they're saying. We had a guest on talking about DARPA several months ago, and tonight they're announcing that a military experiment of hypersonic technology apparently ended in failure shortly after the Minotaur 4 launch. The Minotaur 4 Lite launched Thursday afternoon from Vandenberg Air Force Base. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency launched its Falcon hypersonic technology vehicle at 4 p.m. Thursday. In a statement released Friday, DARPA said preliminary review of the technical data reveals that the rocket successfully delivered the HTV-2 glide vehicle to the desired separation conditions. Are you following me so far? The HTV-2 is an unmanned maneuverable hypersonic air vehicle designed to glide through Earth's atmosphere at incredibly fast speeds, perhaps Mach 20 and above. That according to DARPA. Something traveling at Mach 1 is traveling at the speed of what? Bueller? Mach 1 is the speed of sound. So it's traveling at Mach 20? What? The launch vehicle executed its first-of-its-kind energy management maneuvers, the clamshell payload fairing release, and the HTV-2 deployment worked well. Approximately 9 minutes into the mission, they experienced a loss of signal. An engineering team is reviewing the available data to understand the event better. Now, this is not to be confused with the latest Mach 5 missile project that the Obama administration has just confirmed. In a story in the Times of London, they said that haunted by the memory of a lost opportunity to kill Osama bin Laden before he attacked the World Trade Center in New York, U.S. military planners have won President Barack Obama's support for a new generation of high-speed weapons that are intended to strike anywhere on Earth within 1 hour. Obama's interest in what they call PGS, Prompt Global Strike, a non-nuclear weapons program, has alarmed China and Russia and complicated these reduction negotiations for nuclear arms. White House officials confirmed last week that the president, who won the Nobel Peace Prize last year, is considering the deployment of this new class of hypersonic guided missiles that can reach their targets at speed of Mach 5. So here you got a Mach 5 rocket that's been confirmed, and you've got DARPA testing this new vehicle that will go Mach 20. The world is going faster, isn't it? Well, shooting around some of my favorite blog sites, though, this afternoon, nobody is all that interested in that. Nor are they all that interested in the slightly nuanced claim that the dinosaurs died because of a massive temperature drop brought on by climate change, as opposed to climate change brought on by a comet, which is sort of the prevailing theory. British researchers are now claiming that a sudden plummeting in the sea temperature more than 137 million years ago was the first step towards the eventual road to extinction for dinosaurs. Some experts believe that the creatures were wiped out by one cataclysmic event 65 million years ago, as like a meteor hitting the planet. But the new research suggests that they were wiped out by a series of environmental changes, starting with a drop in sea temperatures. Gregory Price from Plymouth University, who led the study, said his team's research showed the drop in temperature happened when the Earth was in a, quote, greenhouse climate, very similar to the way it is now. He found the drop in temperatures so severe that numerous species of dinosaur previously living in warm, shallow seas, land, and swamps would have died out. Quote, we believe dinosaurs were most likely to be cold-blooded creatures and would have needed the warmth to keep them alive. The big buzz on the net tonight might have been the new gay character that's coming to Archie Comics, but it's not. The comic, which of course dates back to the 1940s, has revolved around the love triangle between Archie and Betty and Veronica. It is debuting its first openly gay character, a new student, Kevin Keller, scheduled to appear in issue 202, out in September, will add diversity to a Riverdale community which has been criticized as being too homogeneous. That according to a blog at the Wall Street Journal. Kevin Keller, I thought the smart money on the gay character on the Archie comics was Reggie. That would have been my bet. By the way, with Riverdale High becoming inclusive enough for a gay character to come out, what's taking you so long, Velma of Scooby-Doo? Anyway, maybe that story is too new and it's not getting any buzz, because the one story that I see everybody talking about, and we don't have to be talking about it on open lines, but if you want to grab one, you certainly can, is the California sea lion on the roof story from the LA Times blogs. This has happened in Newport Beach, California. There's a video. We've put a link up to it on our webpage. You can find that at coasttocoastam.com. Click onto that and you could look at the sea lion on the roof. Now, maybe for people in the Midwest or on other coasts, you know, they're just not used to seeing sea lions or knowing the behavior of sea lions. But is this really all that bizarre to think that it's that a sea lion pup just went up the stairs to the roof of this condo, just like the owners did in tracking the sea lion? Is it really that weird? It didn't seem all that strange to me, but I'm not sure why it seems so impossible. That having been said, it sure would be a weird way to wake up in the morning, you know, with a sea lion up there. And you know, I think I got problems with birds on my roof or bees on my roof. Imagine the cleaning up the mess from a sea lion. No thanks. Those may not be the biggest mysteries that are out there tonight to be solved. That's what open lines are for. Love to talk to you, and so we shall. We'll pick it up first with Robert. He's been waiting the longest east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for open lines. Robert?
Well, first off, I want to say I agree about the Scooby-Doo comment. Definitely.
Yes. Velma, come on. Let's get over with.
Oh, definitely. It's obvious. But on the side of that, a friend of mine linked a video to me titled Kathleen Sebelius Busted. It's a video on YouTube where she's basically confronted by We Are Change and forced to admit that she went to Bilderberg and along with Rick Perry, that they both went to the Bilderberg conference, and she's forced to talk about it. So the video.
What does she say about having gone to the Bilderberg?
It's a good tool against people who deny it. You know, deniers, you know. So she
talks Bilderberg's about it. Real. I mean, there's no doubt about Bilderberg being real. The question is,
definitely.
What happens there becomes a larger issue. Now, what did she say? She confirmed that she went there?
Yeah, she talks about it. The video is, it was captured on a cell phone because, you know, I don't think they were allowed to have cameras in there. But they use a cell phone video camera to capture it. So it's sort of difficult at first to hear what she says, but if you pay attention, you'll hear her talk about it. She says, oh, it's for business, and we talk to people from Europe and stuff. Of course, she doesn't say it's against the Logan Act and all that other stuff.
Wait, stop for a second. So as a member of the cabinet, is it against the Logan Act? Why?
Well, because you have federal officials from our country meeting with foreign leaders in secret. Sharing their agenda with the public, and
I thought that sort of thing goes on all the time. That kind of thing doesn't. Our leaders meet with other leaders all the time, don't they?
Well, you know, if you think about it, how much other stuff is going on that's unconstitutional and against the law? I mean, it's just, you know, the Logan Act. I mean, I don't talk about it too much because, you know, it's just one thing among other things.
But if she admits that she was there, then she's no. If she had been in violation of the Logan Act, and I don't know enough about it, but taking your word for it, once she admits it, then she's no longer in violation of the Logan Act. If it's no longer a secret.
Well, right? You know, that's if she really, you know, talks about the agenda items. She only gave.
I don't think that anybody's required to tell what the agenda items were for a meeting. I think it's very interesting that Kathleen Sebelius, and help me again, is she Department of?
Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services. I was going to say agriculture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Health and Human Services. So she was at the Bilderberg thing. All right, very interesting. And the video is buzzing around the.
It's Kathleen Sebelius busted. Just type that in YouTube or a Google search,
and it'll pop up. Very interesting. Okay, cool. Thank you. Appreciate that. Wayne is in Lakewood, Washington, west of the Rockies. Open lines on Coast to Coast. Wayne.
Yes, you're talking about the speed of Mach 20 and. Fast speed of things. I think the satellites, Mach 20, I believe, is under 18,000 miles an hour. And I think the satellites are doing well over that speed. Of course, that's out
of. But they're not in our atmosphere.
Exactly.
Right.
That's out of our atmosphere a little bit. But there is one being who travels at warp speed, in fact, 1,500 warp speed. Would you guess who that being would be?
I don't know what the being is you're referring to.
Okay, Daniel chapter 9. Daniel's prayer of about 4 minutes where Gabriel interrupts him and he says, at the beginning of your prayer, God told me to come and see you. So you can kind of time it.
If you timed out the beginning of the prayer to the end of the prayer.
About 4 minutes from planet heaven to planet earth.
See, and I would argue that that they were there all along. They were just hadn't materialized yet.
And if you take Job at his word that all good things come from Pleiades, where planet heaven is situated, it's 200 million light years, and you divide time into distance, that's warp 1,500.
Well, I'll go along with that. I'd never really thought about doing the math, but I never thought about heaven as being just a planet either, but thank you, Wayne. Appreciate that. That's very interesting. I have to go and do the math on that more often. Alex is in Texas, first-time caller line, open lines on Coast to Coast. Alex?
Yeah, Ian, you're wrong. Velma's not a lesbian. There's an old episode of Johnny Bravo where they have a Scooby-Doo crossover and she comes on to Johnny Bravo.
Well, I'm not saying she wasn't straight curious. You know, I'm not saying that she didn't, you know, I have good friends who are gay who at one point were married. They just before they could come to terms with it, you know. So and if I might even come on to Johnny Bravo. Come on, you know. I mean, Johnny Bravo is all that sexy. So point taken, but I don't know that settles the issue. I still think Velma should just come out. Wade is in Alberta, Canada, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Wade.
Hi, Ian.
Hey.
I missed the opportunity to call last night, I'm afraid.
On but, hoarders?
yes. But I wondered how many shuttle launches are left.
Boy, it's like a none, right? I mean, there's only...
two or three or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a handful. Part of me wants to say there's only one left after this one, but I'll have to go check on that one.
Yeah.
Even if they say there's three left, you know, NASA has a way of scrapping things, so...
Yeah, I know. So does the federal government.
Yeah. So let me check into that. How many... I got to Google that. How many shuttle flights... left. And what would be your curious about that?
Well, I was just curious because, you know, they've lost two, three, isn't it? And mm-hmm. and I'm wondering how many are left or how many are going to be left to go to all these cities that plan on buying one, right? They want museums to have them, right?
Oh, they want museums to have the shuttles themselves?
Yeah. I'm curious because, you know, they could wind up just scrapping them.
May 14th, they say, will be the last flight of Atlantis. And September 16th will be the last flight of Discovery and the shuttle program. So maybe two left then after?
Two left, and then they go to museums.
And then they go to museums, which is great, you know, but... It'd be nice if they were all ready to go with that next project. I was kind of partial to the idea of going back to the moon. I liked President Bush's plan on that more than I like the Obama plan of going to Mars. But I imagine that there's more far-reaching implications of Mars, if you pardon the pun. But still, I'm just curious about that dark side of the moon project. I think it's so interesting we have it right there, much closer to us, much more feasible to get there, and we're going to leave it largely unexplored. I think it's a mistake, unless they know it's there on the other side and they just don't want us to know, which is, I guess, always a possibility and a very popular theory. We'll leave that there for now, and we'll come back. More open lines take us up to the top of the hour. What are the secrets of the French Foreign Legion? What is this organization really about? We know how old they are. We know that they have a lot of legend that surrounds them. We know that they fight to the last man all the time and have proven that time and time again. But really, what are they up to now? Anything that we should be knowing more about, keeping an eye on? We'll find out coming up after the top of the hour. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. All right, coming up after the top of the hour, we'll talk with Adrian Gilbert, the military historian. You may have seen him on the History Channel, on Discovery Channel. He is an expert on all things military, especially European, and he's written a new book about the French Foreign Legion. So we'll get into that coming up. Voices of the French Foreign Legion is the name of the book, but it really allows you for the first time to understand, at least to, for my satisfaction, what this organization is all about, and what they've been up to, what they will be up to. I mean, it really is. It's not. It's the most unusual army, I think, anywhere on the planet. There is nothing else like the French Foreign Legion, and there are no other military organizations that make the demands of the French Foreign Legion. That's why some people say they are the toughest fighting force ever. We'll talk about that with Adrian Gilbert, see if he agrees with that proposal. In the meantime, open lines coming up till the top of the hour. Where are you going to take the show? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Back to open lines. We'll pick it up with who's been waiting the longest. James is serving in Leavenworth, Kansas on Coast to Coast in a wild card line. James?
Yeah, I tried calling in. I think it was either Saturday or Sunday when you were talking about intuition.
Yeah.
And kept getting cut off, having issues with my new phone. Anyway,
oh, sorry to hear that. I hate that.
I think I got it fixed now. Anyway, I'm a police officer, and I use it quite often. Story and that kind of points to that. Back when I was active duty military, I was in the Navy doing law enforcement, and we took a prisoner from a local agency, and something just, you know, I had that feeling that something wasn't quite right, and so I patted the guy down again, and I found a big pocket knife in his cargo pocket, and I found out later that the guy that had actually patted him down was a rookie. And, you know, stuff happens, but
yeah,
I mean, in my field, you learn to listen to that little voice.
It'll save your life.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
But so, like, do you think that that was just a matter of a cumulative experience talking to you?
I don't know. Just, I mean, it could have been, but because I didn't know at the time that the other guy was a rookie. I didn't
right.
find
oh,
out
no, that's interesting.
After the fact.
Okay, well, that settles that, yeah. Yeah, because if you had known he was a rookie, then you might have thought, okay, well, you got to have a mental checklist of things to double-check to make sure that he got right. But if
maybe,
you didn't know he was a rookie,
not.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I mean, I'm a field training officer now, and I try to teach my guys, you know, if something doesn't feel quite right, you know, there's no harm in asking for extra backup.
Yeah.
You know, better safe than sorry.
I agree with you. I think that's great. I'm glad you're teaching intuition. Take a look at what that was, the thing that we talked about in the book. You can link up to it through the website. Because if you're going to teach intuition, that might even be worth teaching that technique of learning to feel how to check yourself by using your body as your gut, between your chin and your solar plexus, your stomach, to really start to feel whether or not you're having a physiological reaction as well. I think that'd be great. Keep up the good work. God bless you out there. TJ is in Mayfield, Kentucky on Coast to Coast. TJ, where's Mayfield?
It's in western Kentucky, just south of Paducah, Kentucky.
I know that you're not too far away from Clark's Vegas then, which I spent some time in. Hey, so TJ, where do you want to take us? Open lines.
Okay, this is kind of weird. When I was 14 years old, I kind of got a book on self-hypnosis, and I used to, you know, kind of see how far I could go with it, and I've always been interested in things like that. So one time I actually tried to put myself under, like, a really deep kind of, I guess you could call it a trance or whatever, and I had an OBE, or an out-of-body experience. It was real. It was something else, I'll tell you.
Well, all right, so talk about that a little bit.
All right. It's kind of like how I've listened to your other listeners describe it. It was kind of like I was floating out of my body, and it was like, and it felt so good. You know, it was like, you know, it was kind of like, you know, not that I ever do anything like that, but it's kind of like a high, you know.
Right.
And it was, I mean, it was just, words can't describe it, but it was so frightening to me because it's my spirit did not want to come back to my body. And that frightened me enough where I just kind of, you know, kind of snapped out of it.
Right, right.
I've never been able to do that since.
Yeah, that is kind of the weird thing about that. I mean, as I've said before, I used to have OBEs all the time, and you become very conscious. The more you have them, the earlier you become aware of the fact that you're experiencing one. So that, in a way, you can learn to relax a little bit more and sort of enjoy the high strangeness of it.
Yeah, I think what really frightened me was that I've heard the rumors about people actually, you know, leaving their body and, like, you know, being stuck somewhere. I think that kind of scared me enough where I wasn't going to risk it anymore, so.
Very interesting. Well, there's a difference, and thank you, TJ, there's a difference, as I understand it, in the literature, between a traditional kind of OBE and astral projection. Astral projection where you actually leave and then go somewhere, as opposed to just an out-of-body experience where you seem to be tethered to the physical. The physical never leaves your awareness. It's not like suddenly you're, you know, standing on, you know, the Devil's Tower or something looking around. You're always aware of the fact that you're sort of seeing yourself go through different motions, or you can kind of hear the muffled sounds of people speaking to you, that kind of thing. But if you ever have it again, try to relax and enjoy it, and see where it goes. And only if you really feel like, you know, they're telling you, you know, go to the light or something like that, you might not want to go to the light. But beyond that, I don't know. I wish I could have out of body experiences like I used to have up until about the age of 17 or 18. Troy is in Lubbock, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Troy.
Yes.
Hey, where are you going to take us?
I always think it's kind of funny with the posted, like in this case, it's how fast this rocket will go. I always find that a little bit amusing, having been in the military. You know, you see the, you know, like the jet you work on and what the posted speed is, and then after a flight, you go and look at the Mach speed indicator, and it's so fast. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, but it's so fast. And ever since I saw that the first time, I really chuckle, because they're not going to put anything classified out there, like how fast it'll really go. So if it may go 8 or 9.
Well, or, yeah, or let me here throw another idea that maybe that by saying it would go Mach 20, that they're actually speaking in a kind of code to China and Russia.
Right.
They're sending some sort of...
I'm talking about anywhere on the Earth in an hour. Maybe they could do it in a half hour. And they
You're talking,
wanna,
right.
You know, the missile, the conventional missile.
You're talking about the Mach 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that works. The one that
That works.
Yeah.
Let's just call it the one that works.
that's why they're a little, because they don't have that technology yet. You know, they can strike anywhere on the planet in an hour or less. And that would make somebody a little squirmy, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Now, so then you have to ask yourself, is there a reason why they confirmed its existence and the fact that they're going for it? And is it just a chess move? Or
I think because they said they're going to cut back on nuclear weapons. It's, you know, like, well, okay, we got these guys right where they want them, but we have this new conventional missile, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So we're not totally stupid.
No, I think that's a fair point. Thanks, Troy. Appreciate that. Thank you for serving your country. David is in Pleasant Hill, California, on Coast to Coast. Hey, David.
Hey, Ian, how are you tonight?
Good. Open lines. Where do you want to take us?
Well, I just recently got the internet, and I've been kind of a YouTube junkie the past couple months or so. And I've seen a couple of videos. I know a lot of them were fabricated, you know, and fake, but there's a couple of them that are, you know, with very compelling evidence and just looks like it's, well, anyway, the FEMA death camps in Mount Weather, the one in Mount Weather, and supposedly there's some all around the country, and then the Denver airport. That's,
well, let's back up for a second. Of all the things that are on YouTube, you're saying you believe the FEMA death camps.
I don't believe them. I'm just saying that, well, I wanted to get your take on it. So what do you think?
Those would be the ones I would be least compelled to go to. I mean, if you go to Snopes.com, you ever do that? Go to Snopes? Okay.
No.
Well, as a newbie to the internet, jot down Snopes.com. Now, that too, it's too much. I don't think there's, in this post-modern world, I don't know that there's any one place or any one site or any one person that has the definitive truth that will satisfy everybody. But I do like the feedback that you get from Snopes.com, that this is their obligation, is to sort of suss out internet and urban legends.
Good. Well, one more thing.
Yep.
You had a guest on a few months ago, and I listened to it on YouTube last night about the Project Pegasus, and his first name was Andy. What do you think about that? I just want to know what you think and how true that might be.
We'll explain Project Pegasus to people that didn't hear.
Teleportation.
Right.
You know, what they were doing, I guess apparently he was a little kid and he was in the project. His dad was in the military, and it was just about teleportation, going into the future and messing with the future. And that's about it.
Yeah, you know, I guess here, you know, we did a show on DARPA, which we were talking about earlier, because they launched that new Mach 20 missile or vehicle, which failed. And so DARPA, I believe that they would try anything. DARPA just is one of those totally out of the box, well-funded agencies that says, yeah, let's give it a spin. So that there could be a Project Pegasus, that they could be trying that, I don't even think twice about that.
Okay.
So, but whether to what level they've achieved anything, that becomes a slightly more debatable thing. As far as the FEMA death camps, I think the last agency you have to, in my opinion, the last agency you have to worry about is FEMA. I don't think FEMA's that well organized. I don't think they're that.
Well, that's good to hear from you.
That's worth. I don't think that. But I do think that and I think that you just keep asking good questions and just don't be afraid of good answers. I do think there are lots of things that are going on that we don't know about. But once they hit YouTube and once they've been vetted like that, I don't see how they could anybody could call them secret anymore anyway. And if they were trying to get away with it, they obviously hadn't. So that's when I think that I'd be more worried about the things that aren't on YouTube than the ones that are. First time caller line, Michael is in Seattle on Coast to Coast. Hey, Michael.
How you doing, Ian?
Good. Where do you want to take us?
For that caller that was just talking about FEMA camps.
Yeah.
He likes to go on YouTube, so I'd advise him to watch the new movie by Alex Jones called Police State 4, Rise of FEMA, full version on YouTube.
There you go.
I like that song that came up. I can't believe it's on in the news today. And goes back to the headline that you read about, I believe, global warming or whatever, attributed to the demise of the dinosaurs, I take it.
Right. Yep. The fact that there was a greenhouse we talked about earlier, it's a story about how it was a dramatic plummeting temperature sort of greenhouse gas climate change that caused the death of the dinosaurs, not a meteor suddenly landing on Earth. Yes.
Right. And it seems that it's coming at that perfect time where everybody's talking about the carbon tax and the VAT taxes and all the kiddies are getting scared of, global warming's coming to destroy society, and news is just geared to play off of this wonderful role of saying CO2 is a horrible poisonous gas in which all mammals emit through breathing, and you know plants breathe it, but yet people still believe that CO2 is the problem of global warming.
Well, I guess there's a larger question is, are we experiencing global warming and it's a natural phenomenon that we're going to cycle through, or exactly. Is this a man-made phenomenon where this is completely unfamiliar to the planet and we're slowly choking it, or is it that there's a man-made component to it that's exacerbating the otherwise natural cycle, which would be the third option, or that nothing is happening at all and it's all a big concoction. So, you know, somewhere in there is truth. I have a feeling that if you actually look at how much cleaner our air is now than it was in the 70s.
Exactly, compared to old industrial, where massive amounts of carbon right. was being put out compared to now, where there's so many regulations on it. And it's just funny to me that, you know, and I've heard your standpoints a little bit. I'm not sure exactly how you see global warming and all that.
Well, I just think it's an open question. I just don't think it's settled yet. And so when people talk about it like, oh, it's definitely being caused by the cars or being caused by industry, I just don't think that we have the evidence for that. We're too much in the middle of what could be a very natural cycle to know. We won't know really until we're it's in our rearview mirror, I don't
exactly.
believe. But I do believe that in the value of cleaning up the environment. So, you know, I mean, look at what we've done in the last 30 years, cleaning up the air and cleaning up the water. I mean, how old are you, Michael?
I'm 24.
Okay, you don't remember a time when rivers were catching fire in the United States. They were so polluted, they were on fire. I mean, that's just inconceivable today. And we've done such a great job, whether it's with Lake Michigan or with the Cuyahoga or all these other places that had been previously sort of almost like doomed to death, where when I was a teenager, they're saying there will be no lake here in 20 years. There will be no, you know, river here. It's there and people are fishing from them. You know, people are eating the fish out of it. So, I mean, I think that we can fix whatever it is that's broken. I don't think it's a death sentence. But I do think we need to be mindful about it. But I also don't think we know for sure yet exactly what's happening. We won't know for a while.
Right. And so, also, did you hear that? I was watching YouTube and there was I was actually watching InfoWars. It comes on after Alex Jones. He played a clip of Bill Gates and his CO2 model, including people. It was just like a little equation that he had up, a mathematical equation, affiliating people, services rendered and used, and other parts of the equation, including CO2 itself, as the contributor to global warming. And he basically said, kind of along the lines of depopulation, saying that one of these has to come to zero for us to solve the global warming problem. And basically the only thing that can really come to zero is people, because we're the...
Yeah, that's not going to happen, though. That's
exactly.
That's
but
not,
you that's see not these happen. Models of the overpopulation and...
I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. That's interesting. I'll have to go take a look at it so I can understand the math better on that, because I'm really coming up to the top of the hour. So I think I have time for Chris, who is hanging on the longest, and then we'll be done. Hey, Chris.
Good evening, Ian. How are you doing?
Good. On a wild card line, where are you going to take us in 60 seconds?
Okay. I was just wanting to get your opinion on this law that was just signed into effect in Arizona by the governor about the immigration law.
You know, it's weird that they pass a law to enforce a law.
Yeah, that was pretty much my question, because it exactly mirrors the federal law.
But then, and here's my question. I don't have any problem passing laws to enforce laws, although I think that's kind of odd. But, and I don't know quite how they're going to do what they say they're going to do, but I think it's only fair to enforce the laws that are on the books. Larger question for me is, I get confused by who again is all bugged about the federal being too intrusive? Kind of the same guys who were passing this law usually the ones that are saying the federal laws are too intrusive, and now they're passing a law to make people enforce the federal law. I don't know. I think I get lost sometimes on whose side of the field people are standing. All right, so let's take this into the top of the hour where we've got Adrian Gilbert. Nope. Not the guy we've had on before on Coast to Coast, but Adrian Gilbert that you might have seen on the History Channel or Discovery Channel. Military historian, new book out on the French Foreign Legion. Are they the greatest fighting force ever? Why? And why do I keep insisting they're like a zombie army? Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett.